Mr. Gormley, Reel 28. You're now in the desert, which is entirely different from fighting in Eritrea and Abyssinia.
Yes, there were mountains and riverbeds, etc. But mine, there was a lot of good agriculture in that, but also, you know, but, as I say, completely different kettle of fish, and we more or less had a ring there, and everything that was forgotten about in the previous 6 months.
What are your memories of actually living in the desert itself?
In the desert itself, well, we slept under the stars. We never used cook tents or anything like that. We had cook tents, quite a little cook tents. I don't know if you ever remember using them once, I think. And other than that, I mean, you used to get these big campsings. Now, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And that was going for days. Not just hours or minutes, you know. It could go on for days. There's a wind blowing. And nothing else. Sand.
Sandstorms.
Continuous sandstorms. You couldn't even see. Nobody did anything while the country was blowing. Because you were able to know where you see where you were going or what you were doing. You couldn't actually see. And
how did sand affect your lorries and your guns and the working of them? They would probably get into everything.
As soon as the campsite was up, you know, you put the covers on. You had your covers on the guns, the bridge cover was on and your muzzle cover was on. So it didn't really affect the guns to that extent. And of course, they were always kept well oiled, so every gun was always well oiled. Living in the desert, I found it peaceful. I mean, you could lie under the stars there, you know, and it was beautiful, but, you know, really nice, you know. Somebody disturbed the kind of stuff.
It's a lot colder at night.
There were times there it was very, very cold. I'm not bragging there. I can say there were times it was so cold in the desert that I know not only me, but a lot of people, used to wear an overcoat. He wore an overcoat, and even when he went to go to the toilet, you left the overcoat on. You wouldn't take it off. It was that thick and cold in the desert. You would be, and yet, during the day, it would be mad hot. But very, very cold at night. Not always, right? But very, very cold at night. And, yes.
And were the nights very dark?
No.
You could make your way around, could you?
We were still down. When night came there, you had the dark and the light. And so soon that you should go from light to dark, like that. Like that. No twilight. No moon's open. There you could lie and look at the stars and everything. Beautiful.
During the day, as you say, that the heat got particularly strong, you know, but you had been used to heat, hadn't you?
We were used to the clammy heat of the Nausea and the dry heat of the Sin Desert. And to us, the desert itself was nothing spectacular, if you understand what I mean. But
what was it, sand or rock or what kind of...
Well,
the terrain
could go from deep sand to rocky outcrops. And you never knew what. And as I say, I had an eye for it. You know, you develop an eye for these things. You would look at it, you would never go that way. Come out here, and you would take a big, you would come back the way you wanted to be, but you would take a detour round, rather than go there, because as soon as you got over there, you were going to be bumped down. Once you got down there, that I was young getting back out again, you know.
Yeah, what means did you have of getting out of sand if your wagon's got in?
Well, we always had trays on the back. We carried trays, little trays. In the, well, little trays, would be about 6-7 foot long. Yeah, about 7 foot long. Trays. And if you're in difficulty, you could put them down and ride on them, even if you met doing it every.
And the wheels would go.
You could travel on that and then just keep switching wheel, you know, till you go over the bad part, like, you know.
And actual life itself, presumably you had your slip trenches, did you need your guns to cover?
Yes, wherever you went in the desert. Normally, you didn't take slip trenches. You just lay on the desert. Didn't matter what was happening.
Because you're not in the front line, are you, in that sense?
Oh, yes, you'd be in the front line. You'd be in the front line.
You're close behind the infantry.
But only like when you're in a static position. If you're going to be there any more, you never bother yourself. I'm not bloody this. He used to. Yeah, he used to. So the head down and that. You just bury yourself down with the sand and let everything go over the top of you, you know. It was only like, as I say, if you're in a static position like aluminium, well then you needed a slip trench because you were getting bombed and all that. So you had to have slip trenches because you were static.
But your initial experience, you weren't static, were you? In this very first, you were mobile.
Yeah. We were always mobile.
What about the food supply that you were getting?
Oh, we had great food. Actually, the Johnny lad was saying, our cook, actually, it was a proper Johnny lad. In fact, it was a Northumberland lad. And it's funny, he's got a new broad Northumberland, you know. And he shouted me, Come in, you're in it!
So your food was okay, was it?
Oh, yeah. Normally we had good food. Well, reasonably good food. So we got all this very Yankee stuff. We started getting this Yankee stuff in what they call soya links, all made with bloody soya. Mind you, you sit with a Christmas dinner when you sit at one of them, like, about that bloody long, about that thick. The pretty taste. In fact, we found the best way to build them was to cut them up into thin slices and fry them in a pretty fry pan because you couldn't eat them. The bloody horrible taste within they were. It was just pure soya. Oh, God.
And your main meals that you got, was it the bully beef and what have you, or what?
If it was reasonably static, like, you know, we always had it. That's always a good cook would always get you the meal somewhere, you know.
Probably not so much having a variety of food, but the way that it was actually cooked.
Yeah.
A variety of ways of cooking.
I mean, we found these. A lot of these German ones get these German trenches over, and that was the first time we'd ever seen dehydrated stuff. And you couldn't believe it. Yeah, it was a little packet, it was no bigger than that. And you just throw it in the Dixie, and it would fill that to the Dixie with cabbage. And it would kill people.
And this was German?
We hadn't a clue with regards dehydrated stuff like they had. Just showed how well they'd gone into it, you know. And you could fill a dish up with beautiful cabbage. And it tasted like cabbage. And lots of other things besides, you know. That was just like an example, you know.
In action and being mobile, you would be down to basic rations, though, were you?
Generally, corned beef, corn dog, one tin of corn dog. That was your ration for the day. One tin of corn dog. If you didn't like it, what you had to do with that. And of course, out in the desert, it was always very shiny. You know, you saw it in the canyon or that. you can drop on a clear day and it was all running in that, you know, with the heat, naturally it couldn't get any other. Normally tell me maybe you got a really cold one if you had one, it's been a little night or something.
What about brew-ups, which were a regular thing with the
army? Brew-ups was regular. You're carrying an old tin can. You're always carrying a tin can. And always had it kept the same sand in it. Kept the same sand in it. Cut a piece off the bottom of the tin can. And that was your boiler. Just pour a drop of petrol on there on the stand and put your billy can on. Or whatever you had, maybe your mess tin or whatever. And you just put that on there and just keep soaking the stand. You didn't put too much on there, but just keep ticking with it up. And that's that. And if you only put a little drop on and it would just boil up, come up quite easy, you know. 2 or 3 minutes and have a mess tin.
Was it a problem with water?
Great problem with water. Great problem with water. We were actually a lot of 2 pints a day, if you could get it. If you could get it. You didn't always get it. And that was for everything. That included your washing, shaving, your meals. So if you got 2 pints a day, so the pint went to the cookhouse straight away. That was for your meals.
So how did you work it? For your washing and your drinking and your shaving, what have you? And what about shaving? Did you not shave either?
No. Not when you were in the blue. Not when you were in the blue. You know, you didn't. Everybody wore a silk neckerchief. Stop the shaving on your neck, you know. Everybody. No matter who it was, they'd have a silk neckerchief on their neck. You know, you lived the life of war, you actually, like, you know, you didn't really, there was discipline there, but only like when it was necessary.
I should all know your jobs pretty well by now.
Oh yes. Everybody on the good news job, they do exactly what you have to do, you know.
What about toilets and latrines?
No toilets as such. Never seen a woman in the desert. You had them in Mina camp, but that was a permanent camp, you see. So you had these big iron buckets there in Mina camp, always. They had these big iron buckets which were used and taken away and emptied that. But when you're out in the desert, you know, I mean, I've got monologues written about all these things, you know.
So in the desert, what, you didn't just...
You needed to go in the desert, you found out where the bomb had been placed. You set up with your paper and fly swap, and you try gently by others at pierce. That's just the beginning of a monologue.
So you dug your own hole, did you?
Yes. You just took your little shovel away, and then you just buried them. You just carried on. There's plenty space. Plenty space.
Flies, how did you cope with the flies?
No, they would have been of everyone's existence. They really were. No matter where you were. I mean, you used to get a cup of tea like that, and instantly you would cover it with something. And you would just go like that. Because the flies would be all around it. Yeah. And you would just take a sip out the very sip out of the top of the cup and cover it up again. Nighttime, yes, you could do it, but not during the day. Flies are absolutely horrendous at times. I mean, I remember once when we were down in Jarabu, that was once again in Jarabu, great, but no AC straight out in the desert. And, God, the flies there, I've never seen flies like that. Although they tell me that when we went down in the shower on the Red Sea, I reckon that was like that then.
Could you get used to them? I mean, you're there a long time.
You just got used to them. You just didn't bother. You know, what could you do? I mean, they didn't swarm around you so much actually during the day unless you had tea rations. As soon as they spent the tea in the sugar, they'd be there. you couldn't get them away quick enough. You just got, as you know, if you look at kids up there in Algiers and places like that, see the flies, oh man.
How did you navigate in the desert? You didn't have many.
Always on a compass. Never used anything else. Unless you knew exactly where you were, that was like. If you were on a metal road or something like that. Once you stepped out in that desert, everything went on that compass. You had your own compass, every man had his own compass. So you knew you could exactly where you were and how you could find your way out if you were left alone. That's what it was all about.
And the desert itself, was it a healthy place overall? Were you healthy?
Yes. And never, other than the flies, you had these little gophers.
Gerbils.
The gerbil, yeah. If you had a little trench to in there, they'd be running over the top of you and out the top. He'd just paid no attention to one bloody thing. Yeah, it's a little you run over the top of you in the trench, you know. If you had a trench, you'd come in there.
Were there any problems with your health? Desert sores, I think, could be a problem. If you got a scratch or something of that nature.
Yeah, I never had one, personally, I'll be honest. I mean, sores in the Eritrea and that, yes, with a thorn screw and that. Yes, we always had thorns. We had the same in Gadara from Galabat, we used to have these snails used to crawl on you. And just leave a secretion on your skin and you come up with a big blister like that, you know, and terrible. But you found out the way that we were coming, right? So, yeah.
Sunsets, were they a particularly pleasant time of the day for you? Sunset day at the time?
I don't think we're paying much attention to the sunset thing, you know, like, unless it was a really spectacular one, like such as after a big storm or something like that. But I only ever actually saw it in the desert twice, I think, in the whole time I was there. And I actually saw that you could actually, after the rain, and you could see this, and you think the desert is a desert until you see this, and then you see the bloody come up like that and rise as high as that.
It's the flowers.
Beautiful flowers and all sorts. You can't describe it. And it just comes up out of the very desert. It's unbelievable. I mean, later on, when on the last push, I'll tell you that one happened then.
So we're now back to where we started, which is.
We've got to run back down.
And
we're diverted a bit. Now yeah. We're going back now because this. The push that we made to relieve Tobruk was unsuccessful. So we departed back now, we went back down to below Saloum. Yeah, Saloum, Alfaya. And we got word then that we were required elsewhere. So we were seconded to the second Australian day.
Is this just your battery?
Yeah, our regiment.
Oh, your regiment, yes.
Our regiment. And we were seconded to the second Australian day. Half of them went up the coast road from Jerusalem there and Tel Aviv and up there. Well, we went across land. So the Jebel Bills company and that. And we took on the French, the Vichy French.
Oh, is this the Syrian campaign, the Syrian action?
Yeah. That's where we came back from there and we went over there to Syria. Because they'd been allowing the Germans in. All come in disguise as Syrians and that, you know. And we went in there, and let me think, that was the first place we went to. The first place we attacked was a place called Homs. Yeah, Homs. H-U-M-S. And we got hit on two or three times with a French aircraft because it, the first, because they had the same colours as us, only in reverse, red, white, and blue. we got took on a couple of times with the French aircraft, thinking the thing was ours, you know. And we got down there and we went to Worms. Captain Holmes. And then from there, well, we had to get it a few days in Holmes. And I'm wondering, I remember they had the most beautiful ice cream you could ever wish for in the shop, in the cafes and that, in there. But never, and the first time we ever got drunk, a bloody cherry brandy of all sorts. We went into, we knocked this cafe over, up like, you know, we paid on the door, we opened it, and we went in, and Vicky Flemmers and a lot of us, and we all picked different bottles up, and I said, I'll have that, haven't I? I said, I've never had that, I said, it's cherry brandy. And I said, mess up this bloody cherry brandy.
Was much fighting involved in Syria?
Oh,
with you?
Yes. Oh, hell of a battle for the bloody French. There was no way they were going to give up. Oh, no. Oh, they had the bloody Senegalese in there as well. This side with your throat and cut your bloody throat while you were asleep. Oh, yes. Oh, no. I mean, I'm just brushing over it now. I mean, if we'd had our way, none of them probably would have survived that. They can't be in, I'll tell you, once we got started, you know.
What was it like working with the Australians?
At first, we were working with them. And the first, as I say, the first place we went into was this Holmes. Quite a battle. But anyway, we captured the town. And as I say, this is what I was telling you about this cherry brandy, because from there, after we had this cherry brandy and all this other stuff, all that, all that, all that, all that, all that British fire, the next morning, right, you know, and we had to move. We had to move quickly, we had to go down to a place called Palmyra, which is way out in the bloody desert, miles and miles up in the bloody desert. Going out there, and this lad, Mickey Fleming, I always remember this because it was something he used at the time. And we were told that we would not, we had to go non stop. Right? So we set up to go non stop from Holmes and up to Palmyra. And Mickey gets into us in the rooms, doesn't he? So yeah, while I'm hanging his back out the door. holding them out in arms length, and we can't stop, we've got to keep them. He was spattering all the way down and making track like we were killing ourselves a lot of light and all, and he kept getting me, we kept jumping out the door again. And anyway, eventually we got the Palmyra. The time was there. Oh, we picked a couple of deserters from the French Foreign Legion up there. We picked them up. Actually, one of them, he was used as a batman by Major Wagstaff. He used him as a batman because he could speak French to him like that. And he taught me how to throw knives. I could take a bayonet now, and I could throw a knife. I could throw that bayonet. The place about 15 yards away, and I would hit a point first every time I threw.
And they were wanting to come over to the Free French, presumably.
The deserter from the
Vichy French.
There was a big fort there, this Palmyra. You've seen them on the television, these big palisaded forts. Big palisaded fort. One of those was in Palmyra, just like the old French Foreign Legion post that you've always seen on the television and that, you know.
And were the French in In Palmyra, you're coming to get them out, in effect.
The French, there were a little village around it, and of course these were all little wooden huts and that, like, made that way, but the actual French fort itself was all French people in there, you know. So we picked these up on the way, and the time to show that we got there in the cover of darkness. So we made all arrangements to attack the fort like the dawn next morning. With all the guns lined up ready to then go, like, the word come down and they'd all scarper. During the night, they'd all scarper away. So we didn't even fire a shot. But the wonderful thing there was beautiful temples being built, Cleopatra's time. Wonderful things. Very miles around. And a beautiful swimming pool. All tiled in blue. Being there since Cleopatra's day. It's a big place that people go to tourists go to visit, you know. So we were there, and we stood there. We were there about a month, I think, something like that. No, less than that.
And you Australian infantry with you?
Yeah. We had them with us, and then we left there and we went up to. We came back up from Palmyra, because it was out there, to keep us there, you know. There was nobody there. So we came back up past Holmes, and we went on to what's called the French Artillery, which was the French Artillery Ranges. Just north of I'm trying to think of the main right. So because we came from there and I don't know why I can't think of that bloody name.
But you said you were on the French ranges at this point.
Well, we went over to the French artillery ranges. And we had these Aussie infantry with us, you see. And the other road, coming up the other road, you see. So, we decided to attack these bloody hills. There was two hills there. One behind the other. So, the major... we had to pull out into this valley to be able to reach them, you see, because it was about 13,000 yards across, at least that. And so we had to get out in the middle of this bloody valley to be able to hit the bloody French artillery, you see. So we went out there, we started digging in, we went down about that far, bloody solid rock.
About a foot down.
So we just had the spoil left there. So we dug what we could, and then we dug the guns in. And this baby bag stuff, and his old PAC had gone up. And of course, they'd gone up the right hill, hadn't they? And the bloody Aussies had gone up the wrong hill. I haven't put that on there, but this, the Aussies had. As I said, there were two hills. They'd gone up this hill, and the bloody French was on the second hill. Now, our major and his had gone up there, and they're up there on their own, on his bloody hill. And of course, he had perfect sight. He was only a couple hundred bloody yards from the French guns. And of course, he put a stump down straight away. As soon as he truly got his eye on him, he bang, 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 and went up to the bloody guns out straight away with one shot. And then from then on, it was like rain coming down, like bloody rain coming down like that.
And what, the guns firing on you?
The guns French firing guns. And there's no way we could fire back.
And you couldn't get, you weren't dug in.
Came to the end on that sort of, you know.